Mr. Carter, Reel 9. After this particular duty up on the hill station, where did you go to next?
Well, our tour of duty up there was cut short. We returned to Meerut to prepare to go on the frontier. And we got ready, we sent an advance party. And I think it will be around about September when we set off for the frontier.
What year was this?
37, yes, we set off in the either October or September 37 for the frontier.
Can I ask you briefly here, the frontier would be known to you, presumably?
Well, yes.
Oh, you know about it. Was it looked upon as an action station?
Oh, yes. Yes, because there'd been trouble going on there all that year, 37. In fact, we went to relieve one year.
Yes, can you take me on then? You're now going to the frontier and your advance party's gone. What happened to you next?
Well, we closed up, got all our kit together. We got on the train and we went as far as a place called Mariindus. And I've showed you that photo where there's the narrow gauge and the main gauge. When we got to Mariindus, we got out of the main gauge and we got into the narrow gauge. And that took us to Banu.
How long was the journey up to now?
Well, two or three days. We got to Banu and I think we stopped there a day. I'm not sure about it. But Banu is more or less the end of the railway. So from there, we got onto buses to go to this camp. And it's where the trouble had been. They built a big camp and there was two regiments there. There were the Argyll and Sutherlands from Peshawar and the Swabs, South Wales Borders. And I think we relieved the Argyll and Sutherlands, and we took over their place. This camp was bricked all the way around. There was posts up above, what we call pickets, all around it. You had dug in where you dug like slit trenches, even like tables where to have your mailers on. And we used to go out and move around the area. At night time it was pickets, and then it was coming on cold into November, and the engineers, I think there'd be Indian engineers, had just built a fort to stabilise that district, a fort, and we had the job of building the road up to it. And after that was the job complete. As I said, it was getting very cold. I can remember going on sentry duty, and we had fur boots and an extra thick top coat and fur, was it, with that coat, getting that cold. Of course, then all operations with a charge when we were finished then in winter, they didn't come out.
What was the name of the camp?
Gallion.
How large was it? What kind of ground did it cover? How much ground did it cover?
Oh, it could have been, well, there was two regiments there, plus all the transport, plus mountain batteries and all the rest. It was a pretty big camp.
And what were you housed in? What was your accommodation?
I don't think we were housing anything, the clerk. I don't think so.
You were you in tents then, if you weren't?
I think
buildings?
A bit tense, yes. Yeah.
And that would be within this wall that went right round the whole camp?
Yes, yeah, inside that wall. But you have to have these pickets up above to stop them from firing down. You always had that. You always had some. They'd go for 4 days, maybe, build a, what you call a sangha with stone.
So the
wire around it.
So to get the picture, the camp was surrounded by hills or mountains, was
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah. Like in a hollow.
And you had these sanghas on the tops of the.
On the to stop the tribesmen going near, yeah. The sanghas were all round.
Built of rocks, of course.
They built of rocks, yes.
How high, how tall would be the sangha? The
sangha would be about 6 or 7 foot.
And how many people would...
Just
would
enough to look over.
How many people would it house? How many people would be in there? A platoon would be in one sangha.
Yes.
And platoon weapons.
Yes.
Did you have the Lewis gun with you at this time?
No, Bren gun.
Oh, the Bren gun?
Yes.
So that would be rifles, and was it one Bren gun per platoon, or?
One.
Per section?
Yes.
How much, again to get the picture, what was the distance between, say, roughly anyway, between one sangha and the next one?
Well, it would depend on the position.
Well, it was imperative that you had that high position to overlook anyone who tried to.
If it was a position where they could come and shoot down, we took it. Stop them.
Did you have any trouble with the tribesmen?
Not then, because they'd had a lot of trouble in the summer.
This is the winter, of course.
Operations ceased.
What were the conditions like in the winter for you yourselves living in tents in a mountainous region?
About November, the camp was closed down after we'd done this fort. An Indian regiment would come in and take that fort, you see. Maybe a company of Indians.
And where did you move to then winter?
We moved to Razmat then. I was advanced party to Razmat. I was on the advanced party.
So when the winter set in, you moved out of this camp?
Yes.
To Razmat?
Yes.
And nobody would be in that camp for the rest of the winter, presumably?
Well, that camp would just fall down. Because the fort now dominated that area.
All right, that's right. It was replaced by the fort that was built, yeah. So how long would you be in the camp? From arrival to leaving for Razmat?
Oh, maybe 2 or 3 months.
Mm. And the job you were doing, I think, largely was building this road, was it?
Yes, we did that one. And we went out on the, you know, what you call showing the flag or something. Now and again. It was on our tours.
And this was a march out in...
Yes, we went out.
In full battle order?
Yes.
How far would you march?
Just march around the area. You move very. You had the main column all the time. You sent men up in front to cover you. The main column wouldn't move till that was secured in front, and then when that column went through, the flag went and they were returned to the back. That's how you carried on. You had to... the quicker you went up the hills, the less chance you had of being fired on, of being a target. Also, you had to go quick because the main column was waiting to go. The quicker you got secured that position, the quicker they could move forward.
Did you get involved in that, securing a position ahead of the column?
Oh yes, you have to run up them hills and run down them. Probably never sufficient all our lives up there. Oh dear. Got 70 rounds of ammunition as well, you know, and galloped up there. One officer came out from England to join us, and he was we were going up on this hill, and he said, I've got a load of mountain goats here. Oh, we used to vie with each other and who could come down quickest. Always sent the ones who weren't so good, you know, at running, we always sent them first. They had to go first. And we stopped till they got well down, and then you brought into a gallop and followed them down. The quicker you left the position, you see, that the less chance they had of coming, taking that position and sniping on you. That's why you galloped down, full gallop.
Well, have your major column, which is doing this march around, showing the flag, as you say, and yes, well, as you've just described, a body of men would go ahead and occupy the hills above the column to see that it could get through safe. That's essentially what it was. And how many men might be involved in this advance group, this covering group?
Well, quite a few, you know. They'd be given the orders which one to go up on either side. And once them were secured, then the men followed them.
How many men per spot, per high spot, would be used?
I always worked in a platoon.
A platoon would take what were you carrying on your backs? And
just your rations and small packs and that.
What rations would you be given for the day?
Mostly bully beef sandwich. We had more bully beef up there, no wonder we broke into the gallop.
And as I say, you stay on the top of that position until the column moved through, then you move down behind them. Is that the system?
Signaler with you, and he would signal position in position.
With a flag?
With a flag.
Did you say, yes.
So the main column would move, and when the end of the column, when it had gone through, he'd get another signal from the bottom which would say, return to base, RTO. He'd be signal that have to be watching, because it was all done with flags. He'd have to be watching and tell the office RTO, and then he'd send the men down.
And you'd run down the hill. Did you then join the column?
We joined the column at the rear.
And some of the people would, the front would go out to do the next stage?
Yes, that's how it went.
Yeah. Your marching column, which from your photographs are quite long, quite a number of men, was this battalion strength?
Yes.
The full battalion would turn out?
Oh, full battalion was there, yes.
Officers on horseback?
No.
They marched as well? And did you march in threes or fours or what?
Up till then we were in fours, I think. I'm not sure. But as soon as you left Glasmack, you broke up to certain parties, you see.
Any other?
You were in the main party. So it was still the same thing, like. Securing in front and then main column. I mean, the main column was made up of all your supplies and your mules and your transport and food and everything.
And just to stay with the showing the flag columns that marched around, you would presumably it'd be a round route and you'd come back to the camp, did you?
We did then, before we went to Razumak.
Before you went to Razumak.
Yeah.
And that was basically to show the natives that you were there and you were alert, etc.
Yes.
How many miles might you march on occasion like that?
Well, I don't think you marched very far because at times it was slow going. You were held up until the skewer. The main column would rest till it was secured. Then the bloke who was causing all the trouble was the named the fatal of Hippie. And later on we came within, I read in the paper, we came within about 5 minutes of capturing him, and he caused all the trouble with his faker.
The Northwest Frontier is that area that borders Afghanistan, is it?
Yes, Afghanistan and all the names like that.
Khyber Pass, was that anywhere near where you were? It's the one most famous.
That's again, no, it's again Peshawar. We were further to the east, I think. No.
Were natives moving around, although things were relatively peaceful whilst you were there in the beginning, were natives moving around within the area that you had to control or check upon?
We had tribes run what they call Kasadars, and they were supposed to be paid levies, you know, what you call. They were paid by the British Army and the I suppose they were advisors or something, but they were tribesmen, actually.
They were with you?
Yeah. They used to say that they fired the tribesmen during the day and they fired the tribesmen in the night.
Yeah. And you said they were advisors, do you mean guides? Did they?
Well, they make contact with they know the local places, you see. They would act as interpreters and following.
You didn't have small patrols that went out from the main camp?
No.
That would be too dangerous, presumably?
Yes, yes.
An easy prey for?
Yes. Yes, everything was good.
And these Kasadars, did you call them?
Yes.
They were in the camp with you. Did you need to check and stop people and search them?
No, no. It was only that. Well, that might have been, but I never saw anything from it.
But this first occasion, you arrived just basically late in the year,
yeah.
And you had your winter coming on you pretty quickly, and that closed it down. How did you get to, what was the name of the place that you
Razmak.
Went? Well, how did you get to Razmak from this camp?
Well, I think we have transport, I'm not sure. But you see, from Banu, it's not so hilly, so from Banu to a place called Wana, there was armoured cars, they could patrol that road, cover that road. And then when you get towards Razmak, Razmak Brigade came out and covered the rest of the road.
Mm-hmm. But you had to have these roads well covered.
They were road, you see.
I forgot to ask you actually, did you have some kind of stand to and stand down at night in the
all
camp?
Always stand to at night, stand to in the morning.
Yeah. What time would that be?
As light was breaking and the same.
And it's done as
same as it
as the water.
It was the same, wasn't it? Morning.
And you all turned out, and was this round the wall of the camp that you took your positions
yes,
to stand
yes,
to?
Yes.
What would happen to you after that? After stand to you're up, you're obviously dressed, etc. What would the first thing that happened to you after your stand to? Was it typical Indian food that you had been getting, or army food you had been getting?
Oh, army food, the old porridge and stuff.
After breakfast, what would you do?
They would get their orders to go, what they're to do. They wouldn't know till they get the orders.
But confined within the camp situation, unless you were marching out. Did you do the usual drills and training within the camp itself?
No, not in that one. No.
It all really had to do as a security base.
Yes, on call that was on.
Did you parade on the morning as a whatever it was, a battalion?
No, I think it was in the company. There wasn't the room in the camp to do all that carrying like in this area.
Unless you were going out on a match, did it tend to be dull and boring with How did you fill your time in a day, confined within those walls?
Well, you had to take it to maybe you'd be due for pity. Change rooms and you're changing them and then maybe relieving them for 4 days and they would come down and you'd go up.
And that was a 4 day stint, was it, up on the top? So you'd all have all your food and supplies to take up with you.
Your water and everything, your rations.
How did you maintain communications with the main base?
Heliograph. And flags.
And the platoon that would be up there, of course, would be under the platoon officer. Had you still the same platoon officer that you'd come to India with at this point?
No, we got the first officer.
Do you remember the name of the chap who was?
I can't remember. I can only remember one. One was called Nash. Nash. He became a padre. I think he's still alive, a padre. He was a fine-looking fellow. He was very athletic, he couldn't hardly hear him. And he had a runner from Middlesbrough. And he used to boast to this runner how quick they could go. But he got in the finish. You see, I think when we get there, the first 2 days, you were on late duty to get used to the air, the oxygen.
It was quite rarefied, was it, up there?
They give you a bit of late duty.
Were you basically open to the elements up there? You had this sangha, but there was nothing in there to shelter you at all?
Oh, no.
No tent or?
No, no tent.
So you just laid on the ground, did you?
Yeah, your bed came up, in, as I say, in the blue dirty on the mule.
And the same routine of stand to and.
Yeah, stand to.
Did you have to keep a guard going during the night as well?
All night, yes. I know there was one in the sentry. The young kid, he'd been in the quartermaster store as he was. And he was on sentry. And he, of course, during 1970, he stand up, of course, really dusty to man the walls. Thought he'd heard something. We got settled down again. Shouted again, stand up. Manned the walls again. When he did it the third time, he said, "Bugger!"
It must have been a pretty hard duty, difficult duty, 4 days up on the top of a hill, open to the elements. And how could you keep yourselves occupied all that time? It must have been pretty boring.
No, it wasn't boring because you're always expecting something to happen, you know. You didn't want to be on your throat, you sleep like.
They were as active as that, were they?
Eh?
They were as active as that.
Oh, yes. Well, you never know. It was bred into you that you kept on your march. And that added to the excitement a bit. Dull the boring, as you said. Then. You know, we always hoping maybe something would happen, we could open fire, but we never did.
Were you ever told why there was this unrest in the area and why you were there, other than security, of course?
Well, it's very wicked. All the war, it raised them on the tribes, you see, and it got them all to rise up against us.
It's a holy war against the white man, against the white soldiers.
Yes, yeah. With the clothes of jihad or something.
Were they well armed, these natives?
No, they weren't well armed, no. Not as they are today, thank the Lord. No, they only had these mostly homemade weapons, you know, they made them themselves.
They had a
reputation
of being particularly good marksmen. Did you have this experience to find that out? Or was it a reputation that really was just in you reading the books?
Well, no. I mean, we were in a camp once, and they sent a volley into the camp, and all they got was one mule.
The dramatic cinema of the time with the Northwest Frontier activities, was it anything like that?
No.
So you moved to Razmak, you said. What was it like down there? What were you doing down there?
Well, Razmak's a big garrison place. There's about 8 Indian regiments and 1 British, plus all the supports and that. And the camp itself was surrounded by barbed wire, two lots of barbed wire, and a stone wall, and the huts were mud huts, like, you know. This is where the bed books come in. And the British regiment went up there in the late year. It was there for 1 year. Did 1 year too. And at night time, there was the inline picket that went round the wall, plus other on the latrine was outside these two barbed wires, aprons. It was outside, a tin latrine. And there was always a machine gun, a Bren gun, during the day, pointing at that. He was on sentry. So if you went to the latrine, he was there. At night time, it was closed. You brought the barbed wire in time, it was closed, they pass it through. And they used buckets for latrines then inside, you see. But in the morning, first thing, it was the inline picket's job to move these barriers, these barbed wire barriers, to the side and charge into the latrines, you see, with bayonet sticks. It was full of bayonet holes. These tin huts were full of bayonet holes, having the Scots regiments and done it. And then you could use it. But with it being, you see, it was outside the barbed wire, and you couldn't use it during night time because it wasn't covered during night time. I mean, the sergeant could hide in there and that would be it. So it was used during the daytime. And this man was on guard with his rain gun. He was that.
Did you ever get the feeling that you're in camps, you can't move out of them? You're the ones that really are under control rather than controlling.
Well, yes. I mean, Razmak was nicknamed the largest monastery in the world. The nickname was Razmak. And, we had 2 Gurkha regiments there. We got on well with them. In fact, one of the times, used to take them to the whole mess, which was a thing on there, taking the native regiments into your mess. And they took them to the pitchers as well. These 2 Gurkha lads got on well with them.
You said that the huts were basically mud huts, mud floor, presumably.
Yes.
The beds, were they similar to the ones that you had earlier in India, the same kind of beds that had been issued to you?
No, you could push them back.
And you couldn't with these? Oh, you could these back?
These back, yeah. You could push these back. Make them out. But during the, when the, it began to get warm up again, you know, about March and May, began to warm up. I heard one of the lads say, he said to him, he said, what the hell were you striking matches all night for? Well, he says, these bed bugs, he says, good all night, he said. So I said, I looked in my bed, I said, I've got no bed bugs. He says, haven't you? He took his boot and he hit a corner like that and out the drop. Any bed bugs. So, to cure that, we used to take the bed outside, get paper, light it, and burn all the cracks. That's how we killed the bed bugs. I know I was laid asleep once, I felt a mouse on my mouth. Oh, heaven.